This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane. It's been 36 years since a pope has visited Philadelphia, John Paul II, back in 1979. And as anyone who's within a stone's throw of the city well knows, preparations for Pope Francis's arrival on the 26th are underway and even reaching a feverish pitch as city officials and the Secret Service try to figure out how to wrangle the huge number of expected visitors, the food, the travel, restrooms, and etc. But logistics aside, what does this papal visit mean to the Philadelphia area? Our guests include Sister Mary Scullion, longtime advocate for the homeless, mentally ill, and people who live in poverty. Sister Mary is a co-founder of Project Home. Sister Mary Scullion, welcome back to Radio Times.
Thanks, Mary. It's great to be here.
And Father James Martin is a familiar voice on NPR and a Jesuit priest, native Philadelphian, author and contributing editor to America Magazine, and also has a novel out in about 2 weeks called The Abbey. So watch for that. Father James, welcome back as well.
Thanks. My pleasure.
So Pope Francis is here in 11 days. Are you ready?
We're excited.
I think we're both on pins
thrilled.
And needles.
Let's begin by talking about Jorge Mario Bergoglio, Pope Francis. Why do you think he is to so many such an appealing figure? Father Jim?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think he embodies that most American of characteristics, which is that he's down to earth. I think people feel comfortable with him. One of the best comments I heard was, if I were with, this is a mother of a friend of mine, I respected John Paul and I really admired Benedict, and I would be so sort of in awe if I met them. But if I saw Pope Francis, I would want to hug him. Mm. So there's a sense that people feel close to him. I think they do like his emphasis on the poor and his simple lifestyle. I think they like what he said about mercy and compassion. And I think they like his sense of humor and his sense of joy and spontaneity. So Americans, I think, cotton to someone who they see is down to earth and funny and someone who doesn't take himself too seriously.
Sister Mary Scullion?
I would agree with everything that that Jim said. I think that Pope Francis speaks to what is most fundamental to us as human beings. And therefore, he can speak to all people of all faiths, people who are on the margins as well as, you know, those in power, because he speaks of the basic principles of mercy, of hope, of faith, of love, and gives us all a place at the table. And I really think he just has really touched all of our hearts, our minds, our souls.
Right from the get-go, he upended church tradition. Gone were the red shoes. He sleeps in a hostel. He's shaken up the Vatican bureaucracy. And this pope is quoted as saying he wants to make a mess. In your opinion, is he doing so, Father Jim?
He is definitely making a mess. He's a disruptive pope, and he is, as you say, challenging things and doing things in a new way. One of the great hallmarks of Jesuit spirituality, we're both Jesuits, the pope and me, is freedom. Freedom from sort of being confined to things that were done in the past in a particular way. And so, as you say, he doesn't have to wear the red shoes. He doesn't have to live in the apostolic palace. He chooses Francis, the first pope to ever do that. He is free of this need to bind himself to things that he thinks are unnecessary. And I think people are responding to that as well. And being free, you can let the Holy Spirit work through you sort of more easily.
And if you would, just define Jesuit for those of us who don't know.
Sure. It's a Catholic religious order. We take, like other religious orders, like Mary's order, vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. We live in community. We were founded in 1540 by St. Ignatius Loyola. We're known mostly, I think, in the United States for our educational institutions. So obviously St. Joe's, St. Joe's Prep. We also do, you know, all sorts of different works around the world. So we're the largest men's religious order. And he's the first Jesuit pope in history, which also makes him something of a disruptive influence.
So let's get to Philadelphia with all its beauty. Philadelphia has a poverty rate of about 26.5% and is the poorest large city in America. Camden's poverty rate, I think, is about 40%. Sister Mary, many of those living in poverty are children. What have you seen in your work?
That today, I think another thing that Pope Francis speaks to is that our economy has to align itself with human dignity and the common good. And I think it's particularly encouraging to see that Pope Francis will be coming here, where our city, the tenth, one of the of the 10 largest cities, we have the highest poverty rate of the 10 largest cities in America. And our sister city, Camden, has a very high poverty rate as well. So to have Pope Francis come and him be the beacon of light shining that we can do better and that we have to align our economic policies and our social policies to promote the common good is going to be a welcome message for so many Philadelphians, especially, and people in Camden and around our country and world, especially for children.
What do you see in some of your work?
Well, we just see profound and painful suffering, people living in the margins, people living on our streets, people living in substandard housing conditions, people not being able to provide for themselves and their families. And many elderly people as well who are living on the margins. So there is a lot of pain and suffering right now, I think, in our city and in our communities around our country. And we see with the growing economic disparity that the plight of those that are poor is a very important one at this time, particularly in our history.
What is the estimated number of homeless in Philadelphia?
About 6,000 people a year live on our streets, but that's only about 10% of people that actually experience homelessness. Most people we don't see because they're in shelters or in substandard housing or in abandominiums. So there could be up to 60,000 people in our city that experience homelessness in a given year.
And as we mentioned, this is a Pope who has taken on poverty. What happens to these people when the Pope gets here?
Hopefully we'll all be re-energized to do something about the issue of homelessness and poverty. That's hopefully what will happen when the Pope comes. And concretely, what will happen to people who are living on our streets is what happens to them every day. There isn't enough place for people to have shelter or a home. And so there are still people that will be, on the margins and sleeping on our streets when the Pope comes. Those 2 days, additional efforts will be made to keep people safe and enable them to participate as fully as possible in this historic occasion.
So what are you hearing from them regarding the Pope's
visit? This is a little complicated, Mary, but we'll do our best.
Sure.
I mean, initially, people were going to have to leave the secure zone and all their possessions. And now, over the past couple of weeks, rules have been relaxed a little bit where people are going to be able to keep their possessions with them as long as they pass the test of no weapons, or objects that could be particularly harmful. People will be able probably to stay in the red zone who are homeless at night and hopefully participate as fully as possible in all the festivities. But that doesn't change the reality, the painful reality of what it means to be homeless, which will happen before, during, and post-Pope visit. But hopefully it'll be an opportunity for us to re-energize and refocus our efforts to end hunger and homelessness, not only in our city, but in our country.
Father Jim, Francis is not afraid to hug or touch those who physically might not be appealing to others. Is this just him, or is he sending a message?
It's both. One of the great gestures of his papacy so far was embracing this man named Vinicio Riva, who had sort of a disfiguring skin condition. I think people saw the picture of him.
Sure.
And he embraced him in St. Peter's Square very spontaneously. And this was nothing that was prepared. And so this is him. I mean, he is a really pastoral person. I mean, he worked with people in Buenos Aires. You can see how warm he is. And like Francis of Assisi, who embraced someone, he embraced a leper, many centuries ago. He is doing this not only spontaneously, but he also knows what he's doing. He also knows the value of gesture. In the Christian tradition, we say that Jesus taught by words and by deeds. And so it's not simply the Pope's preaching and his homilies and his encyclicals, and as important as they are. It's what he does. It's his gestures. It's washing the feet of women and Muslim women on Holy Thursday. It's embracing people like this man, Vinicio Riva. It's, you know, putting a little clown nose, which I saw recently. It's letting little kids come up and hug him. So he is teaching us physically, too, with his gestures. And I think that's going to be an important part of his teaching when he's in Philadelphia.
We got an email from Edward, and he asks, would you ask your guests how they think Pope Francis compares with John the 23rd? Sister Mary?
I mean, I think he compares very closely, you know, aligns very much with Pope John the 23rd, and he often quotes Pope John the 23rd in some of his writings. I think this pope believes fundamentally in the virtue of mercy and sees that as fundamental in everything that the church is about. And that is mercy. He talks about mercying and encountering and the importance of really that relational aspect with those that are poor and homeless, that they are at our table. It's not something different. That's us. And we have to be a part of that community. And he says faith has to involve those that are poor, has to. And, you know, has to call us to be involved with those that are poor.
So, Sister Mary, how does this extend to an encounter that any one of us might have with a homeless person on the street?
It extends very fundamentally in the sense that all of us have to respect the fundamental dignity of every single person, that there are no throwaway people in our community, and that upholding a person's dignity means housing, education, jobs, health care. Upholding a person's dignity means looking a person right in the eye and saying hello to them and recognizing them as a human being. And so it's both that concrete act of mercy and charity, but it's also about changing systems that marginalize people and aligning our economic system with human dignity and the common good.
Father Jim, Francis, and John the 23rd?
Well, I think there are great parallels. You know, John the 23rd at the opening of the Second Vatican Council said in this beautiful line, nowadays the church prefers the medicine of mercy. You know, and he was responding to a church that had, you know, issued condemnations and warnings and things like that. And I think you see this, you know, a sister was saying, with this pope, you know, this pope of mercy, you know, who talks about mercying. You know, one more thing which I thought was really interesting was that the pope himself said that it is not enough to simply, you know, be with the homeless and be with the poor. You have to touch them. And he meant that physically. You have to touch them and greet them and greet them as beloved children of God.
And that's so challenging.
It's very challenging. It's challenging. I think, you know, I worked with homeless people and refugees and all sorts of people who are poor over my life as a Jesuit. I think one of the great lessons for me that I had to learn over and over and over as a Jesuit was that these are individuals. And so when you meet them as individuals, you can encounter them and accompany them.
All right. We've got to stop for a moment to take a break. We're talking about Pope Francis and what his visit means to the Philadelphia area. Father James Martin is a native Philadelphian and a Jesuit priest. And Sister Mary Scullion is co-founder of Project Home. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 888-477-9499. There's more of Radio Times just ahead. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscowane, and this is Radio Times. Father Jim Martin is here. He is a Jesuit priest, an author, and native Philadelphian. We're also joined by Sister Mary Scullion, co-founder of Project Home. Sister Mary is a longtime advocate for the homeless and mentally ill, and we are talking about Pope Francis's visit to the Philadelphia area beginning September 26th. As always, if you'd like to jump into the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-477-9499. And email works too, radiotimes@whyy.org, as does a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So I know Marty's going to be addressing this when she's back from vacation, so we won't dwell too long on it, but I would like to be on Capitol Hill when Francis addresses Congress on the 24th. That's going to be interesting.
So would I.
So would I.
The former editor of America Magazine, Tom Reese, who's also a kind of veteran Vaticanologist, said, quote, John Boehner was out of his mind to invite the Pope to speak to Congress.
He's a devout Catholic.
Yes, I know. But I think the Pope is going to be an equal opportunity disturber. Yeah. You know, because he's going to disturb – he's not going to be political. The Pope sort of transcends those categories of Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative.
Sure.
But he's going to disturb Republicans when he talks about the poor, income inequality.
Climate change,
you know, those kinds of things. He's going to disturb, I think, some Democrats when he talks about life issues, you know, abortion and those kinds of things. So, you know, the Catholic message, I mean, it's disturbing. The great line is that we need to comfort the afflicted, as Sister Mary does, but also afflict the comfortable. And he will be doing that. I would imagine that you would probably be able to hear a pin drop, you know, when he's speaking, because these are uncomfortable messages for some people who, particularly who are kind of entrenched in powerful positions and don't get talked to like that.
Sister Mary, you've reached out to members of Congress. You'd like to see a bipartisan agenda to address poverty. So I'm assuming you would like to hear the Pope address this. Do you think that's going to happen?
I do. I hope so. And I can imagine that it wouldn't, that he would not do that. Everything that I've read about Pope Francis, his experience in Argentina, his experience around the world, the fact that he just took two Syrian families into the Vatican as refugees, I cannot imagine they will not speak about the plight of the poor, not only in our own country, but around our world. And I, for one, will be glued to my television set.
Well, realistically, what do you think is going to happen after the Pope is gone, considering the gridlock of recent years?
It's really up to us. I believe that that ordinary people are moved and are finding a spiritual home within Pope Francis. And that awakening of mercy has to lead to action. And the more people that are motivated to get involved in our civic life and in our political process, that's the only way change is going to happen. We can't depend upon our elected officials alone to change things. We have to be the agents of change and transformation. And Pope Francis calls us to be transformed and converted by those that are poor in our society. He challenges us in his latest encyclical. We have to change the way we're living. We have to change our lifestyle. We have to change our public policies in order to make this world the kind of world we want our kids and grandkids to grow up in.
Do you think he will leave behind the so-called Francis effect so that change does indeed get rolling?
I do. And I believe it's even bigger than the Francis effect. I think God's grace and love is always going to be the final word in our society, in our community. And the number of people that are suffering, not only in our country, but around our world, we have to hear that cry, we have to be touched by it, and we have to do something to respond to it. And I think Pope Francis, unlike anybody else, has been able to amplify that cry, has been able to make human the needs of the pain and suffering that is so much a part of our world. And I just can't imagine that many people will not be touched by that and be motivated to do something about it. Like we've seen in times throughout our country, slavery, you know, women, labor. I mean, we're a country of we the people, not them and us.
If somebody's listening to this program and says, okay, what's the first step I take? What do they do?
Well, right now, we have a campaign for mercy and justice, and I invite the listeners, this is a really easy thing to go online, www.mercyandjustice.org, and you can go on the Campaign for Justice and send a letter to your congressperson asking for bipartisan legislation to end and prevent hunger and homelessness. You can text $10 Francis to 20222, and that's a $10 gift to the Francis Fund, where we're concretely going to expand the capacity of organizations to meet the needs of people that are hungry and homeless in Camden and Philadelphia. You can go to the Grotto, tie your knot, pray. We're all united. One thing that we all have in common is our knots, our struggles, our prayers. So we as a human family can work more closely together to address that. So there's many things. They're the easy
concrete things,
but it's always taken one step at a time. Get involved any which way you want to get involved.
Father Jim, earlier this month, the Pope declared that all priests will have the authority to pardon women who've had an abortion during the special holy year that begins in December. This is usually reserved for bishops. in a number of areas, although that has been effective in Philadelphia for quite a while. What is the Pope saying here?
Mercy. That's what he's saying. Yeah, it's a kind of unusual thing to talk about because, for the most part, priests already have, and certainly in this archdiocese, have that authority to forgive women who come to them. And it's God who does the forgiving, of course, and the rite of reconciliation. There are some dioceses, you know, throughout the world where the bishop sort of reserves that for himself, and, you know, you need to get basically the bishop's permission. And the Pope says, you know, I don't want that, you know, at least for the year of mercy, you know, that he is talking about. So it's another of his efforts and gestures and concrete things, you know, as Sister was saying, to make people feel more welcome. He has done that for women who have had abortions. He has done that for divorced and remarried Catholics. He has reached out to them. He's done that for the LGBT community. You know, beyond his most famous five words, "Who am I to judge about gays?" He said in many interviews, and he said in an interview with America Magazine, we must accompany them, you know, and be with them. And that's that kind of language and tone and outreach and merciful and compassionate language is not something that people are used to hearing. And let me tell you, it is really affecting people, and people who have felt disenchanted and marginalized and disaffected from the church, you know, who are Catholics as well as non-Catholics, feel more welcome. And that really is, to me, the Francis effect, this great welcoming. You know, Jesus was always going out to the margins. He's always going out to the people on the outskirts, you know, people with, you know, illnesses and prostitutes and tax collectors. And that's what Francis is doing. The movement for Jesus is always from the outside in. And that's exactly what Francis is doing. And I think it's spectacular.
Now, he's not changing basic church doctrine.
He has not. I mean,
going to see gay marriage in the near future.
We're not
going to see women ordained as priests.
We will not. Okay. Nonetheless, you know, the tone and the style and the language and the gestures are a change. So, you know, the change in style and the change in tone is a change. And there's a reason I always say that people are feeling more welcome, you know. And, you know, I know a lot of LGBT people who feel more welcome. And, you know, a year ago I was at a parish in Long Island. I do a lot of parish talks. And a guy came up to me and I was signing some books and he leaned over and he whispered something into my ear. And I was startled, and I said, please say that again, because reporters ask me, you know, for these things, and I like to come up with something that's less than anecdotal or more than anecdotal. And the quote was, 40 years I've been away from the church, Father, and I am back because of Francis. Mm-hmm. And I hear that over and over again. So things are changing for a lot of people.
Things are changing. There's still some trouble, you know, struggle, I should say. The story of Margie Winters, and you're nodding your head, Sister Mary Scullion, who lost her job at Waldron Mercy Academy because she's in a same-sex marriage, essentially. Is there some sort of reconciliation in the near future with that sort of story? I know you've been quoted on this particular issue.
I certainly hope that there is reconciliation in the future. And I think what Pope Francis challenges us all to do is, like what Father Jim said, that we have to accompany one another, listen to one another, and by that we're all changed. And I for one, am still hopeful for change in that area. I don't know what the final solution will be, but unless we begin to open up the dialogue and listen and talk to one another. And again, the thing that Pope Francis says in both of his encyclicals, reality is more important than ideas. And I take that in this issue. We have to really see the reality. What is the fruit of relationships of love? And I think that reality will call us all to conversion and change. And what the outcome is, I can't say. But I do know that conversion, transformation, and change are possible. And God's grace is stronger than any dogma. And, you know, it's the development of doctrine. It's happened throughout the centuries of the church. And I believe that the development of doctrine will continue to develop and change. I don't think this is the final word.
So what would you say to LGBT people who don't feel that they're quite 100% welcome at this point in time? Father,
you know,
Jim?
I always say, and I work with a lot of LGBT people, the first thing, you know, if you're Catholic, obviously, we're talking to LGBT Catholics. Number one, you're baptized. okay? You are a part of the church. You are a part of the church as much as Pope Francis is, you know, and don't let anyone tell you that you're not a part of the church, okay? Number two, see yourself as a beloved creation of God, you know, I mean, in yourself, you know, that God loves you, and to try to get people to see themselves and find experiences where they're loved by God. Number three, find a parish where you feel welcome. You know, not necessarily that has to have LGBT programs, but where you feel welcome. And if you struggle, believe, you know, Sister Mary says, in grace, you know, and believe that people are listening. And, you know, it is a difficult time for LGBT Catholics, I think, you know, because there's so many, you know, things going on. But, you know, Pope Francis, I think, is really showing us the way in terms of encounter. One of the most important things I think the church needs to do in its relationship with gay and lesbian Catholics is listen, right? They have been talked at a lot, you know, but they have not been listened to. And so, you know, we know that Pope Francis has met with LGBT people, and, you know, he even says the word gay. He's the first pope to ever say the word gay, right? He said it in English and, you know, in an Italian kind of comment. Mm-hmm. So I think that LGBT Catholics need to understand that they are as much a part of the church as I am, as Sister is, as you are, and as the Pope is. And to start with that foundation and to be welcome and to find places where they feel welcome. So I really feel very strongly about that. It is, and, you know, it's a new issue, I think, for the United States. You know, so you think, you know, the Catholic Church, it's not surprising, I think, that the Catholic Church is sort of struggling with this. And also that Pope Francis is struggling with this. I always say, look.
He is?
He is your 79-year-old Argentine grandfather, right? So, you know, he's not someone that grew up with, you know, gay and lesbian friends, at least not who were out, you know, sure, as far as I know. So that's sort of a growth for him too. But what the church needs to do, I think, in addition to proclaiming always the gospel, is to listen, which is what Jesus did. Jesus went out to people, and even people at the time who were not seen as, you know, as part of polite society, Roman centurions, prostitutes, women, you know, who were unmarried. He met them. You know, he was challenged by them, and he listened. There's a great story, if I can very quickly. He met a woman who was not Jewish, a Syrophoenician woman, and she said, "Will you heal my daughter?" And he said, "You know what? Jesus said it's not right to take the food and give it to the dogs, right?" Which is really
harsh,
seemingly. You know?
Yeah, that, sure.
It, not just seemingly, but it is harsh. And she responds and says, "Even the dogs get the crumbs from the table." And he kind of softens and says, "For saying that, your daughter is healed." What is he doing? He's listening. He's listening, and he's responding. He is encountering her. It was a difficult encounter. He listens to her, and that's our model. I think the church is called to be a listening church.
Okay,
you're listening. And he changes his behavior.
Mm-hmm. He does. He changes.
We've got some calls and comments stacked up, so let's get to some of them. John, in Ardmore, you're live on Radio yes. Times. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Sure.
Sort of a question comment here. You know, I hear the Pope say great things sort of in the rhetoric that a politician would about social inequality, income inequality, spoke a little bit about gays and gay marriage. And it's everyone seems to think, well, this is the way of the future, and no one knows when that future is going to happen. Why is it that we can't have this Pope do what he says? Let's condone the use of condoms in AIDS-ridden Africa. Let's get on the 21st century here with gay marriage. Is he aware, is everyone aware, that homosexuality occurs in nature? It's
all
a
right.
natural thing.
John, we're running and up against the clock, but your point is well
okay.
taken. Change right. now.
I think he's moving to change things. And, you know, one of the things I heard from a friend of his, he said, "I can't do everything all at once." You know, so some things, you know, will not change in the church, you know, but some things can change in the church. And I think he's also looking, you know, he's looking beyond, frankly, some of those neuralgic issues, which are very important, the issues that the caller just brought up. And he said, "I think that the church has talked about those too much, frankly." And he's moving us more to looking at questions of mercy, compassion, and the poor. That's, I think, where his emphasis lies right now.
Okay, we've got time for a quick question from Jane in Huntington Valley. Hey, Jane.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering what the views of Pope Francis are about the Jewish people and even the state of Israel.
Thanks, Jane.
I'll take your answer.
He has very good relations with Jewish people. He, I think, co-authored a book with a guy named Rabbi Skorka. And I read, there's a couple of great biographies out on Pope Francis. And one of the ones I read talked about his relations, very, very intimate relations as Archbishop of Buenos Aires with the Jewish community, with the Muslim community. I'm not sure about his understanding of the state of Israel, but he did invite Israeli and Palestinian leaders to the Vatican to pray together. But this is someone who's relationship with Jewish people goes way back.
And yet he ruffled Israeli feathers when he acknowledged a Palestinian state.
He did, but he also ruffled Palestinian feathers when he sort of prayed at an Israeli memorial for Israeli
He ruffles
people.
Everybody's
He ruffles
feathers.
As Jesus did.
Father James, you've written about humor in a relationship with God. Perhaps this is one of the Pope's attractions. It seems like he's a genial person with a spine that has some titanium in it.
Yeah, he enjoys himself. He enjoys making jokes. There's a great quick story I can tell you about. He visited Sri Lanka and was greeted at the airport by 40 elephants. You know, they were all decked out in silk and bells and things like that. And a few days later, he met with the Jesuit community in Manila in the Philippines. And there were 40 Jesuits there. And, you know, we Jesuits dress pretty casually. And the Jesuit provincial or regional superior said to the Pope to break the ice, well, look, in Sri Lanka, you had 40 elephants to greet you. And here you have 40 Jesuits. And the Pope said the elephants were a lot better dressed. So he has a great sense of humor. And he also his first encyclical was Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel. So he's someone who's very joyful and knows that joy is part of the message, the ultimate message. You know, the resurrection is good news, you know, of Christianity.
Sister Mary, you work in some tough circumstances. Where do you find the joy? We've got about 30 seconds.
I find the joy in the people that I work with, in the community, in the power of relationships, in the fundamental dignity of every person. Joy is the gift of truth. Even if you're in harsh situations, if it's true, it's free and joyful.
We are talking about Pope Francis, what his visit means to the Philadelphia area. We're back in just a moment on Radio Times. But if you'd like to jump into the conversation, by all means, do so. 888-477-9499 is the telephone number. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. More in just a moment. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. Our guests this hour are Sister Mary Scullion, co-founder of Project Home. Sister Mary is a longtime advocate for the homeless and mentally ill. And also, Father Jim Martin is here, Jesuit priest and author and native Philadelphian. We're talking about the Pope's upcoming visit to Philadelphia. And as always, if you'd like to join the conversation, feel free. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. So the Pope is going to give an address, on immigration in Philadelphia September 26th on Independence Mall. Archbishop Chaput waded into the debate earlier this month, calling for, in his words, a legalization program that gives undocumented persons an honest, attainable chance at citizenship. As far as the presidential race is concerned, there's a lot of rhetoric flying around. Do you see any real movement happening in that direction anytime soon, Sister Mary?
I thought the Archbishop's address was excellent. I thought it was phenomenal. And I think that the Pope, if he does speak, I mean, he will speak about immigration and our policies and how they affect people and families and children. And I thought that both in the presidential rhetoric, Archbishop Chaput both took on the Obama administration about detention centers, but he also took on the Republican Party, especially Donald Trump, on his that it would be immigration around the family as opposed to immigration around economic, policies that, depending upon your skills, instead it would be keeping the family together. And I think that the Pope's address will make a big difference in our country's debate. And it's going to be a welcome voice because, again, in the last presidential election, very little talk about poverty, about those who are on the margins of our society. I believe this presidential election, there'll be a lot more talk about immigration, both immigration in international terms, but also about the homeless and dispossessed here in our own country.
Father Jim, again, do you think there will be a lasting Francis effect on immigration when he leaves the country?
Well, that's a good question, and I also agree with the Archbishop. I thought that's a beautiful quote, and he's absolutely right. And the bishops have been really out in front, you know, on this issue, and I think it's fantastic. He will certainly address this to Congress. You know, I think at the UN he will talk about the European migrant crisis, refugee crisis right now. Whether or not there's a lasting effect, I think, depends on, you know, Sister says us, of course, and the legislators we choose to represent us, but also whether or not the legislators are open to hearing difficult truths, basically. I mean, I think a couple of things could happen. One, they could be open and their hearts can be changed. It's probably difficult to be in the presence of someone who is so holy. I've never met him, at least not yet, and not come away changed and say, you know, this guy, he's very holy. I really should open myself up and listen to what he says. However, there is also a tendency among particularly Catholic politicians to sort of explain away what he says. And anything that people don't agree with, you know, they say, well, I don't really have to pay attention to that. That's too political. When in point of fact, you know, this is part of Catholic social teaching, you know, caring for the poor. Pope Francis said the other day, he repeated it. He said, it's not simply about tolerating, it's about welcoming. And he said it three times, welcome, welcome, welcome. And that's why he asked Catholic parishes, institutions, monasteries, sanctuaries in Europe to take in refugee families. Sister said the Vatican, you know, for people who keep saying, what about him, is taking in refugee families. They have homeless shelters at the Vatican now. And Pope Francis went even further yesterday, which frankly shocked me. Sometimes he does things, and I don't think I would say that. He said if any Catholic parish or institution or monastery doesn't want to take in a refugee family, then they should lose their tax-exempt status because they are not acting as Christians would.
There's that titanium.
That is titanium, yes. And so he is, for the last caller who you know, questioned him or had a question, he is putting his money where his mouth is. And that's hard for people to get. You know, in his encyclical, very briefly, Laudato Si, he said, two of the most challenging things I've ever heard about the wealthy and some of the indifference that you find in the wealthy. He said, why are the wealthy indifferent? This was shocking to me. Number one, they think they are more worthy than the poor. That is a very strong thing to say. Number two, they don't, you know, as Sister does, have any physical contact with the poor. They are far from them. And when they make decisions that affect the economy and the environment and the poor, they feel they're more worthy, you know, and so they make decisions that are based on that. And they have no contact with the poor, so they can't imagine how this is going to affect the poor. That is very strong language, and I would imagine that he is going to be as strong. He'll probably
take
wrap
Congress
it.
To the woodshed?
Well, I think he will. He will surely praise the American culture and all the wonderful things about this great country that I love, and he's never been to. You know, democracy and our ingenuity and our history of welcoming refugees and caring for the poor. But he will also challenge us. So it's not going to be a tirade, but it's going to be pretty – it's going to be like a – he compared the church to a field hospital, right, you know, where people should come in and be – he's like the doctor now diagnosing some of our illnesses. And when the doctor tells you that, you need to kind of listen.
We've got a lot of comments, so let's get to some of them. A website comment from John. Greetings from Queensland, Australia. I love the program. The notion of Francis challenging us to change is the basic message of Jesus. He says, I love the vision of Jesus in John's Last Supper, where he took on the role of not just a slave, but a Gentile slave. One of my lecturers described Jesus as the subversive sage, an action that emulates Jesus, a subversive sage. Is that Francis? You're nodding your head.
Well, I think Mary, that's the Mary. Gospel. I think that's the gospel. And I think that Pope Francis' humility recognizes that we all have a voice and a role to play in that. Again, Pope Francis coming to the United States, we have to be that Pope Francis. You know, it's really not about him. It's really him challenging us to be faithful, to be of action and take a lead in making this happen. And not just Catholics, people from all faiths. And that's what's so amazing about him.
An email from Marie. She says, I welcome the Pope and hope he has a safe, successful journey. However, with all due respect to this trip seems impractical and costly. Why not take the cost of this extravaganza and help the homeless with what they really need, food, shelter, and sometimes even mental health services?
And so we are doing that through the Francis Fund. Actually, that's we agree. I mean, there's certain costs to just having this amazing event, which is so exciting and so great in so many ways. However, we think just to have the event without having direct impact on the poor is not enough. So we established the Francis Fund for the work of ending and preventing hunger and homelessness in Camden and Philadelphia. And our goal is $1.5 million. And right now we're about very close to $1.2 million.
And who's contributing?
People from all walks. We get donations from $1 to the largest gift was from the Conley Foundation to get it started at $250,000. Mm. So
all right, Martha.
Everywhere in between.
Sorry about that. Martha from Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. You're live on Radio Times. Hi, Martha.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for having me answering my call. My question is about the poor and the homeless, the marginalized, and these are the people I think the Pope is hoping to reach. How are there plans or specific provisions being made for them to have participation, like a formal participation in this? Because we want them to feel encouraged and hopeful when he leaves, and not just those of us who can make a change by, you know, hoping that they feel encouraged and hopeful after he leaves, and are they going to be able to participate in a meaningful way?
Good question, Martha.
Festivities.
Thank you for the call to Radio Times. Will the Pope see any of their faces when he is looking out on the parkway at Independence Mall at the Festival of Families?
We hope so. And the other way that we've tried to give voice to those in need is we have a journal that people in prison, kids that have been sentenced to life sentences in prison, people in homeless shelters, recovery residences, people on the street have written in this journal in their own handwriting, in their own words, messages and prayers to Pope Francis. And we're hoping that we'll be able to give that to him so he hears the voices of thousands of people on the margins of our society.
And also remember that in each of the cities that he is visiting, he is going out and meeting the poor. In Philadelphia, he's going to the prison, you know, which is, a
awesome
place where mostly poor and underprivileged people, you know, are. In New York, he's going to Our Lady of the Angels Church in Harlem, you know, which is in a poor area, obviously. In D.C., he's going to a Catholic Charities homeless center, and apparently he's going to have, you know, lunch with them kind of outside in a, you know, kind of very informal setting. So, you know, once again, he's teaching with gestures. He is not simply – and most of the time he's going to be speaking about the poor or meeting the poor. It's not that he's, you know, meeting the rich and famous. So he himself is saying, you know, go out to the poor. And I always like to say to people who bring that up – I mean, obviously, Sister was saying this is going to cost money because it's a big sort of security thing. But two things. Number one, the Catholic Church spends zillions – to use a sort of very precise term, of dollars on the poor around the world, is the largest provider of social services to the poor in the world, basically. And number two, I always say to people sort of puckishly, if people are worried about that, you know, the money not going to the poor, feel free to donate. You know, and there's nothing preventing people from donating to the poor, you know, who are inspired by all of this.
Back to the phones. Patrick in Ardmore, you're on Radio Times. Hello, Patrick.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the impact I feel he's going to have on the young people of our community. My son is a senior at St. Joe's Prep, and they're hosting 350 Jesuit-educated boys and girls to for the visit, and they've been preparing for 4 years. And I have no doubt that this will be a life-changing influence to them. It's just, I think, going to be a fantastic thing for them.
Thanks, Patrick, for the call.
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about this. It's called To Philly for Francis, and it's sponsored by St. Joe's Prep, which is the Jesuit high school in Philadelphia. And what they're doing is, as the caller was saying, 350 kids from all the Jesuit high schools all around the country are coming in. They're going to have a couple days of programs and service, and then they're going to have a procession from St. Joe's Prep, you know, from the prep, all the way into the Parkway, which is nice because it's very near. So it is very exciting. St. Joe's University is doing something for kids. They'll also walk in, and I'm sure Old St. Joseph's Parish downtown is doing something. But this To Philly for Francis, which you can find on the web and they're tweeting, is a great idea. And young people are almost deliriously excited about the Pope coming. They really love him. And, you know, last night I was at Penn, my alma mater, giving a talk, and I got a shirt that said Pope is dope. And the Penn students, this Pope, Penn for Pope, 1,200 kids from Penn are going to be walking from West Philly into onto the Parkway.
So speaking of young people, do you think that the number of young men entering seminary is up? Is there a direct Francis effect there?
There is. You know, in the Jesuits, we've gotten more inquiries, too. You know, so that the number of people who have been inquiring. But it is slowly moving up. I think it's going to take a while because he's been Pope for 2 or 3 years. And I think it takes, you know, a man or a woman who's interested in priesthood or religious life to kind of discern that for a while. But certainly in the Jesuits, we are seeing a noticeable increase.
Let's get to Carol in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Hello, Carol. Welcome to Radio Times.
Father, I'm so excited. You're talking about, you know, the young excited about the Pope coming, and I'm certainly not young. I just don't see, the Pope talks about families. He's mentioned gays, lesbians, women who had abortion, divorced people. He never talks about the single vocation, and I was going to write to him and I let it go, which I still may do. I just feel left out.
Well, actually, he does talk about the single vocation. He's also talked about parents and grandparents. He's talked about all the different vocations in the family, and the single vocation is a really important one. The problem is that it doesn't get as much media coverage, so you may not hear about it as much. And he'll talk about that in homilies and his pastoral letters to people, but it just doesn't make the media. But if you read his daily homilies, he's spoken about the single vocation particularly, as well as all the other vocations within the family.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Carol. I'd like to get one more comment in from George, an email. Hello, I'm Presbyterian, not Catholic, but I really like this Pope, and it seems a lot of other Americans do too. However, it also seems a number of people support Donald Trump and his message of fear and hatred. These are not merely apathetic people, but people adamantly opposed to a civilized world. So how do we ever make lasting progress, and how can the Pope be of help with these people? And he goes on to say, I have no idea how many Trump supporters consider themselves to be religious. Sister Mary?
I think the hope there is people are getting involved and speaking up. I think that no one person has the corner on the market on the truth. And I think just by sharing respectfully our dialogue, that we'll all come closer to where we need to be. And it is the ability to listen to a diverse viewpoint respectfully.
Father Jim?
Well, I really do think, I mean, you can't kind of avoid that Donald Trump and the Pope on many issues, if not most issues, are diametrically opposed. I've often thought when the Pope comes, they should lock him in a room with Donald Trump, you know, and see what happens for an hour. I'd love to hear the conversation. Yeah, I mean, it needs to be said that, and I don't want to be political, I'm not a political person, but certain politicians have viewpoints that are completely opposed to what the Pope is saying. In terms of the poor, in terms of refugees and migrants, in terms of income inequality, you know, income disparity is a very important thing. And so
he's a critic of capitalism.
You know, it's interesting. I'm a Wharton grad, and so I consider myself a capitalist. And he has some very good critiques of capitalism. The problem is, I think that people have mistaken his critiques for condemnation. You know, he's not saying we need to get rid of capitalism, but he is diagnosing a system that is not perfect. I mean, just go to 30th Street Station and see the homeless, or just go downtown or North Philly, you know, or all the places where sisters at work. Capitalism is not perfect, and he is saying that we need to make decisions based on something more than just the bottom line. And he's right. And that would be something that, you know, Donald Trump would oppose. So we shouldn't, you know, kind of, you know, gloss over it. But I hope people like Donald Trump and others are open to being challenged.
Sister Mary, we have about 20 seconds left.
Yeah. Again, I think one of the things I really loved about Pope Francis is his call to say we have to be islands of mercy in the sea of global indifference. And
amen.
I'll leave it at that.
Sister Mary Scullion, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Sister Mary is a co-founder of Project Home and a longtime advocate for the homeless and mentally ill. And Father Jim Martin, thanks again. Thanks for joining us once again. Father Jim is a Jesuit priest and author. The Abbey coming out in a couple
of Abbey weeks. The Abbey set in Philadelphia is coming out on October 13th.
And he's also contributing editor to America Magazine. This reminder, visit our Facebook page and check out our podcasts by heading to our homepage, whyy.org/radiotimes. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moscawain. Hour 2 is just ahead.